Is it possible to get fit riding your e-bike? Steve? Personally, I have zero interest in 32. I cannot be arsed. Is this a big moment in the whole of mountain biking? Could this happen where someone walks in and does the same and all of a sudden we're talking about 30% price cuts? I bought a hardtail because I want to get out pedaling.
You want a bigger ass.
Well, I feel like I'm... Welcome to this week's Global Mountain Bike Show. This week, we've got a few chunky subjects. We've got, can you get fit on an e-bike, and mullets, which is why we've got Steve in for both of those things. And we're talking, actually, the big news this week is from Specialized, big industries where they've reduced the prices of their e-mountain bikes by up to 27%, which is pretty big. I'm Neil Donoghue. I'm joined by Owen the Bike Nerd over there. Owen, what have you been up to?
Greetings. I've been riding my single speed, doing painting, and then sort of trying to recover on a gravel bike. So, yeah, sorry, confessional there.
Oh, sounds all right to me. Steve, you're permanently in shorts. You bucked the trend of mountain bike trousers. You look like a postman all year round.
Well, riding e-bikes is hard going, right?
It's
an athletic
She's
sport.
Gone in there already with a kind of like... Yeah.
Well, it's true.
And Can the viewers get a sneak peek of your mullet, please?
It's a Recedo mullet, isn't
Recedo.
It?
Recedo. Right, well, Rich will be in with his full Recedo mullet with more chat on big wheels as well, so yeah.
Well, this week's show, I think this is really interesting. There's some big industry news, which does that sound like an oxymoron to you?
I mean, it does. It's exciting nerdy tech. Yeah.
Because Specialized have actually made a big announcement in the e-mountain bike world last week to reduce their prices by up to 27%.
Wow.
And actually, I think it's not normal. You know, sometimes you get sales, but this came with an announcement. They actually wanted to frame this. And they said operational improvements on the Levo platform reduce cost structures specific to this product line, because at the moment, it's just the Levos they've reduced. And the competitive moment in e-mountain bikes made now the right time to act. The result is a permanent pricing reset that brings more riders into the category. I think the important part of that statement is the competitive moment in e-mountain biking.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at moments in time in the mountain bike world, it doesn't get much bigger than this moment, is it? Because everything was quiet in the mountain bike world. People are choosing, well, in the e-mountain bike world, should I say, people are choosing either a Bosch or a Shimano or a Yamaha or a Specialized motor. What travel, what spec job then? All of a sudden, here comes this brand. It was DJI at the time. Upset the market, gave riders arguably what they wanted.
So we are reading between the lines here, but this competitive moment, we think, is Avanox, is Amflow coming into the market with some, you know, very good bikes at very competitive prices, and it's made Specialized reduce their prices. And I want to pose a question, is this a big moment in the whole of mountain biking? Could this happen where someone walks into, you know, the off-road world and does the same, and all of a sudden we're talking about 30% price cuts from massive manufacturers like Specialized?
I mean, it'd be super exciting if that was the case. Like, getting more people on bikes and getting better value for money would be, I think, awesome. I'm saying that, like, as someone that is going to spend money on bikes, but maybe if you're a bike brand, that's a bit scary.
But why do we think is that in reaction to Amflow?
The first thing, we're making an assumption it is because of Amflow, right? Because there's lots of things happened in the last few months. I mean, you've got Aventon, who've come up with an amazing bike, £3,500, with, you know, with power and torque and battery range numbers. Giant bikes. We rode Giant bikes in Tuscany recently.
It does feel to me like, you know, Amflow is a big talk about, but there is a wave in the e-bike world of really good, cheap bikes that we haven't really seen in the mountain bike world. I'm thinking back here, Steve, you'll know more about, like, things like when YT showed up.
I'm not sure there's a wave of it, you know, to be honest. I think, you know, there's still bikes out there with, you know, people have chosen Avanox systems on their bikes. The bike that you've got is particularly special, obviously, because it's a Neil Donoghue bike.
Of course.
£3,999. There's not many of those.
No.
But to answer your question, you know, yes, there was like the likes of YT. YT came out with the 2S in 2010, I think it was. It was £3,500. And I personally knew the performance of that bike in $3,500 was as good as downhill bikes on the market at £6,000-£7,000.
But Owen, you know, that let's talk about how that worked. That was a direct-to-consumer brand that made it cheap. That we're not talking about the same thing quite here.
No, and I think that's where it's kind of interesting, is we've had a couple of direct-to-consumer brands. So opposed to using the kind of traditional model where a brand would set themselves up and then sell to a distributor in, you know, specific areas, sometimes country by country versus by region, and then dealers buy the bike, and there's kind of effectively costs on all of these steps. And with direct to consumer, you've got like a website and you buy it and you're buying it straight from them. And I guess YT are probably one of the most notable ones of recent times, and ones that there's a story to as well. And I think that's where there was lots of savings. But still, with these brands, there's still other directions, because Amflow is Avanox, which is DJI, which is a huge tech company, isn't it? So it's like a factory direct. So it's a different model again.
I think I would like to tell you some stories behind the scenes stories. Like back when YT came out, a leading person from one of the big main component manufacturers came up to me and said, "Are you actually supporting YT?
Wow.
Don't you know it'll kill the sport?"
Wow.
I was like, "Well, yeah, because it means that people can ride bikes for the right amount of price." And do you know what? The same actually happened when we had Amflow on this channel. Several people came up to me and said, "Are you really actually supporting those guys?"
Interesting.
But so YT coming out with a very good couple of bikes,
Capra.
Didn't force someone like Specialized to reduce their prices.
I don't think it did it?
I don't think.
You see, so. I think that Specialized did introduce some models, I can't remember what they are, but models that were a lower price point from like the Stump Jumper suspension bike. And I think they were only available on the Specialized website. You couldn't get them in Specialized dealers or something weird like this. So I think they did try and react. I think then, well, things changed at YT and opposed to being this brand that we're, you know, like specking, say, Boss suspension or taking slightly different steps, they start to play a mainstream game and grew. And then, well, there's a whole other conversation to be had about that. But yeah, I think it's a different conversation, though, of factory direct versus consumer, you know, like brand consumer direct.
I don't think we can discount the fact that, e-mountain bikes, you know, sales in the UK, this is very UK centric, but like, you know, 70% of e-bike sales in shops are now e-mountain bikes. Mountain bikes are becoming a luxury good for some people. I think if you look like a 100mm super lightweight hardtail bike, it's a luxury good, right?
I mean, yeah, it is.
I'm thinking about the road bikes. How much is a really expensive road bike these days?
Great example. Like you've got, you know, Colnagos or something like that, which you could easily, I'm sure they've got production versions for $15,000. They've probably got ones for $25,000, which is wild.
Well, that's where Amflow came in. There are two models. This is the first two bikes, the PLs they came out with. They had a $6,000 bike and a $9,000 bike. The top of the line Specialized S-Works Levo was £17,000, or £1 under £17,000.
Well, me and you were talking about $20,000 Levos only a few months ago.
Did they not do a limited edition version? But yeah. Now that bike has come down to £12,499. So still a high-end machine. But, you know, we talked about this a bit in the last show as well, actually. Like, it's happening in the road bike world where there's this new, is it X-Lab, has shown up with bikes, another Chinese brand that's shown up with bikes that are really, really good value products. And I don't know what it's done to that world, but on the pro circuit, there's lots of riders on them. So that's sort of shaking up that world. And I sort of wanted to pose a question, like, could someone show up with a trail bike and a downhill bike, a Chinese brand, and make it as good, and if not better, than what we've got on the market now, and do, you know, come down this business route of factory to consumer and undercut all the rest of the industry and force Specialized to bring down their demo by £3,000.
I don't know how many downhill bikes people sell, do they?
Well, no, maybe the trail
market. Maybe that's separate. I think, yes, it could happen. I mean, so XTS, you do this X-Lab brand, they focus mainly on the kind of road and gravel market at the moment. And the bikes are very competitive. But I think what's interesting is, for me, I just sort of assumed that they were engaging in sort of like the lowest price. That was the price is the point. That was their target. But they're a huge, probably the biggest carbon fibre factory in the world. That's what their website says. Whether it is or not, I haven't gone there with a tape measure to measure up. but they're also really good at the technical stuff. So they've got like a 550-gram frame. So they're also kind of pushing the boundaries of technology to make the frames. So my logic is, I think if they focused, as they have done already, on road, and they did a similar thing where they really looked at the market, there's no reason why I don't think they
so that's
be.
A yes from Owen. This yeah. could happen. What about you, Steve? What do you think?
So the way I look at it is the fact that mountain biking grew up in California, allegedly, right?
And
so
like, that's a big one for you. You don't have any idea
really?
About it.
Well, I was riding in the dirt when I was like 40s, you know, in the 1970s.
I'll have to get Gary on this.
So my perspective on it all is that mountain biking allegedly started in California in the 1970s, right? We saw the gradual shift across to Europe with the brands such as Commensal and Cube and Lapierre and blah, blah, blah.
Scott maybe
as well. And now all we're seeing is the gradual shift east towards China. And I'm pretty sure...
Until it comes back around.
I think, you know what, I reckon we'll see more and more Chinese brands. They've bloody good bikes to ride.
Yeah.
Like all the tech. I mean, lots of the mountain bike market lots of the mountain bike manufacturing takes place over there anyway, so yeah. I can't see it slowing down.
You're the only one of us that's actually been to China, I believe.
Yeah.
I
didn't see any mountain bikes.
But did you get... apparently there is... We talked about it as well. It feels like there's a really big burgeoning mountain bike scene there.
Do you know what? Well, I went to this place on the edge of Shanghai and I was there on a Befang bike and there was loads of kids on downhill bikes. I thought it was really cool and they were sessioning the hill.
Oh, nice.
No uplifts or anything. They were just pushing up and down this hill sessioning. It was really cool to see.
Just on tracks.
Huh?
Nice one. I think
I get the joke now. It's really slow to that.
I'm slow to that. Yeah. Don't get it.
That's good.
I sort of think that
it looks like a session.
I think Amflo came in with this amazing product that was very good. Everyone talks about numbers, but it was just very good, and it was very cheap. So that isn't quite the same in the mountain bike world. You couldn't bring in this system that's quite the same. However, I think it's the business model that could happen.
Yeah.
Like you talk about these big Chinese brands that just, you know, now they could be passion projects. Now, it's not just the land of manufacturing, it's the land of mountain biking where eventually some kid that loves mountain bikes will start a brand. You know, that may have already happened. But when someone comes in and they do it at the right price and all of a sudden these bikes are going direct to the riders from the manufacturer and they are much better prices.
Well, we want more people riding mountain bikes, don't we?
We do. Yeah. I think it's really interesting. Like if you're a brand where you invest in your kind of like product in terms of the engineering, the R&D or the marketing, all of that is now even more important than it was before. And having your kind of like what consumers actually want versus
is it though?
Pet projects.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure you're wrong, but Amflo is a brand no one had heard of 2 years ago, and now we're having a conversation about them making, potentially making specialised, reduce their prices by 30%.
Well, the
that
thing
is huge, yeah.
It's like 2015, the Specialized Lever was launched. It was a benchmark. And then 10 years later, Amflo have made a bike. That is a benchmark. Let's not forget the Levo is still a bloody good bike. Like the Levo of 2019, it does a lot of the things that the Amflo does. I'm sorry to go into detail, but it was 700 watt hour. It was 20 kilos. It was 10 grand. The Amflo is 9 grand. It had 95 newton meters. The only big point of difference actually is the 115 newton meters and 1500 watts peak power.
And
it is a quieter motor. It's a more sophisticated motor. And I think it's the sophistication that comes with that motor, basically. But all the other things, it's pretty much as things were 8 years ago.
And the good news is, if you believe in mountain biking starting in California and you love that idea and you love Specialized, you can now get one cheaper.
Yeah, which is great. And if that, I think that's the exciting thing. If that can happen to regular mountain bikes too, well, it could be a good thing, couldn't it?
Yeah. I think that's the thing to remember. The Levo is still an amazing bike. And the Levo captured people's imagination. It still does, I think. And it comes down to, let's not forget, it comes down to suspension kinematics, geometry. All these things are as important as power and torque. And yeah, I think
we've
kind of...
And I guess that also touches on a thing with road bikes, with mountain bikes. I feel like a road bike... And this isn't kind of taking away from the manufacturing capabilities of some of these brands that are building the bikes, but road bikes haven't really changed. I know the GCN boys will get very upset with me when I say they haven't
They've
changed for about 50...
They've got wider tyres, Owen.
Yeah, okay, they've got slightly wider tyres. They've now got brakes that work in, like, full stop. Yes, some of them have got aero gains, but essentially the geometry has not changed.
In last week's show, we put a poll, actually, to the viewers.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think is more important for World Cup racing, the rider or the bike? You'll be shocked to know that 96% of the people said the rider.
Really?
Steve, would you agree? We don't care, Steve. Too slow.
Well, I'll dive in while you cogitate. I think don't understand how big a difference a bike can make to a rider. Bits falling off. A good example would be a burly Kiwi racer who raced for a brand that had two letters, and he had a problem with rear brake calipers falling off, and his career went backwards quicker than if he had a working brake, and his trust in that bike fell away as quick as his results did. And that, you know, that bike and that brand were winning World Cups only sort of a year or 2 years before. New bike, no confidence, different rider.
I've got an answer for that. To be quite, you could have given me 30 seconds to ponder it. I'll hit it back at you. Could Greg Minnaar have been even more successful had he been riding a bike that might have been a bit bigger than the Honda? The Honda had a 357mm bottom bracket. It was pretty much a size medium. I mean, could he have been, it's only his later part of his career that he had a larger bike. I mean, the guy's 6 foot four, right?
And even then, he had to have it modded.
Exactly.
Like modified rear wheels.
This is example number one. Example number two is when Aaron Gwynn went from Trek to Specialized. Didn't do very well.
No.
Didn't do very well. And I was at Val d'Isol with the Specialized guys. Call us Specialized chat today. And I said...
There's a lot of variables in there, though, Steve, different teams.
I said to Gwynn, he goes, I'm riding a medium. I said, why are you riding a medium? And I said, that's a lot smaller bike than the Trek. And so Specialized asked me for the demo that I had.
Oh,
and
it's that started.
And they gave it to Gwynn, and Gwynn came third. So he went from 20th to third in two weekends. Oh. I think it's because you're riding the wrong size bike. So, but I think bike does matter.
Size?
Will you ask me bike?
Yeah.
Can you say specifically?
I mean, that is like the right size is the right.
I mean,
bike.
There are lots of other examples. You could look at the likes of, you know, Steve Pete. I mean, it's only in the last, 10, 15 years that bike size has actually probably got to a sweeter spot than it was. I mean, we're still learning mountain biking, right? We're still learning mountain biking. So I think, I think less so than previously, but definitely does.
Right, Steve, thanks for that. We'll bring in Rich so he can bring his mullet. Steve, you stay here with yours.
Yeah, stay with your mullet. Okay.
Steve, whilst you're TikToking, we're going to talk to Rich Payne about his mega mullet experience. Rich, you're fresh off the plane back from Italy.
Yeah.
What are we talking about? What is a mega mullet? Explain that to me and the viewers, if we should care about it or not.
I mean, firstly, I care about what dance he plans on TikTok next, to be honest. I'd rather see that.
Let's get the facts right. I'm not on TikTok.
All right.
The Macarena would look good on you.
I didn't even know what you're talking about.
Get on!
What are you
on? Whatever. Well, no, all right, mega mullet. So yeah, I've just been at Paganella Bike Park, where we did, I think, build an exclusive first gravity-orientated mixed wheel superbike, we'll call it.
Material?
Aluminium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Made in?
Germany.
By?
Nikolai.
Excellent, great company.
For those that might not know, a mullet bike is a small wheel at the back and a bigger wheel at the front. Size you can choose on generally 27.5-29, right?
But mine's longer at the back.
non-existent at the front. I'm the same. But this one was a 29-inch rear wheel and 32 at the front. And the big thing here is that haven't really seen these in the downhill or enduro world. So we made one 165mm at the back, 170 up front.
Did that feel long travel? Because I feel like on bigger wheel bikes, it almost feels like you get more travel than you've got. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, because you've got like the rollover capabilities and stuff, right? Like it kind of nullifies some of that travel, which I guess this is where that, we get into that chat in a bit.
Love to, Richard.
I know. No, it did still feel like there was a lot of travel.
There was a lot of pre-season talk about World Cup downhill, that maybe someone was going to show up on a downhill bike with a 32-inch front wheel. Didn't happen.
Nope.
I actually don't think it would have suited that track at Seoul, but Do you think that is going to happen? Is it worth it?
I think this year we'll definitely see it in practice at some point.
Definitely.
In practice. Yeah, yeah. I think we will. I think teams are always exploring what's faster.
Whoa. Are they though? Right?
Yeah.
I remember, Josh Bryson was the last person to win a World Cup on a 26-inch bike.
Yeah.
Or was he the first to win on 27.5? I can't remember. But Jeff Stieber built a 29-inch wheel intense bike in 2011. The first World Cup race with a 29-inch wheel was Santa Cruz in 2017 at Lourdes.
Yeah.
So what happened in the 7 years in between?
Well, someone's got to take the plunge.
Kicking the can down the road is basically what they were doing. Too scared to go with the technology.
But that doesn't mean because they were scared doesn't mean they didn't in the end. Because then, after Lourdes, we saw every man and his dog turn up on a 29. But it was faster.
So how come suddenly then you're saying that we've gone from there's been nothing to do with 32s. All of a sudden, within 12 months, we're going to see a 32-inch wheel.
You've got to make a bit of money top up somehow, haven't you?
but where do we stop if 32 is better than 29?
Well, I've ridden a 36 as well. That is rubbish.
The problem I see with this is at the moment, actually, someone won a stage of the Cape Epic on a cross-country bike.
Nico Mullally,
I do count that, I suppose. But at least on the cross-country side of things, it makes sense.
100%.
And you got the tyres. What tyres did you have on the front of that?
So I had Maxxis sorted us out some dissectors. They were ExoTrail.
That's pretty low profile, isn't it?
Yeah, fairly low profile and not really. The casing wasn't up to it. So I got a puncture.
This was the problem back when 29s were still quite a hot topic back in. I think I rode my first 29 in, I don't know, 2010, something like that. But I remember my thoughts on this 32-inch, right, are quite different to my first thoughts when 29 came around, because I was kind of open to the idea of 29 and I feel a little bit more closed to the idea of 32. I don't know, but I remember I rode 29, I remember I did it wasn't TikTok, it was actually Twitter back in the day, and I was doing timed runs and I put this Twitter post out and I said, this is the first time I've ever ridden downhill quicker on a 29-inch wheel bike than a 27.5. The comments went off the charts.
Yeah.
How dare you say this? It's like you're saying, basically calling myself talking rubbish.
Well, I went quicker.
It was a fact. It
wouldn't have been the first time, though, would it?
Yeah, thanks, Don. Yeah, I always rely on you for a...
keep you grounded, right?
But funnily enough, those first 29ers were pretty funky. Didn't they say, we need a steeper head angle because this wheel's bigger?
Because it's jacking the front end.
I remember those first... I did the same thing. I got a... Santa Cruz, and I had ridden it once and I jumped on it and raced it that weekend because I was like, this is faster. It was a tall boy. It was pretty funky. Like.
Didn't Rob Cooksley beat you at the British Enduro Series on a 29-inch? Borrowed my bike and you beat me,
not
right?
The second time I didn't. When I got on my 29.
Oh, God, here we go. Here we go.
But I'm not...
You're a mugger.
I'm not convinced of the future of this. But did it ride any good? Was it any fun? Was it faster?
Oh my, so many questions. Okay, hang on.
Was it the world's first articulated mountain bike?
With the rear wheel steer in front, yeah. So, firstly, if you haven't watched the video, go and watch it. It was faster. It was faster. I saw it on a back-to-back runs to my 29, my Rallon. It was 8 seconds quicker over 3.5 minutes.
On that track?
On that track, which was quite rough, fast bike packing, berms, you know, typical big mountain bike park.
What about compressing those berms?
Yeah, so then I definitely needed a bit more time, setting up-wise. We had a couple of days on it, for sure, and you could dive into it loads more on the suspension.
How much time do you need, exactly?
More time than 2 days. But you definitely felt like... you were a little more stood up. You definitely needed to exaggerate your body movements to move it around more. And that goes for in the air as well. It's just a monster of a thing.
The gyroscopic force of the...
Exactly.
Don,
rotational weight.
I'm interested in your sort of angle on it. What's your thought? Is your mindset open to 32?
No. If I'm honest, I like seeing it, but personally, I have zero interest in 32. I cannot be arsed.
And why is that then? Is that because you're just, 29s are great. Nick's wheel's great.
I think 29, I've reached the limit. Well, if we're talking a mullet, maybe, but when I'm moving a bike around, I catch the wheel on the inside on a 29. It says, no, I don't want any bigger. And actually, I don't want a bigger front wheel. Because I don't necessarily want to go faster. I want it to be fun.
So this is performance-driven, I think. That's where this may be a performance-driven evolution on this one. But I, like, you know, if we were to move on and look at it from a consumer point of view, well, there's a whole host of extra
tires,
but tooling, traveling,
get it in the back of your car on your bike rack.
So yeah, I mean, it turned up in a bike box the same height as me. It was monstrous. Do you know what I mean? We looked at it and we're like, that's not fitting in the back of the estate.
Thing is, right, how much is, if it's going to go to downhill, how much is a tyre going to weigh? It's going to weigh like 2.5 kilos.
That's what I raised. This tyre that I had on was 1170 grams, so just shy of 1.2 kilos.
That's a cross-country tyre.
Not far off, yeah? So to make a, I'd say minimum 1.5 kilos for
a
tyre.
And what's the wheel going to weigh?
Well, the wheel, because it was, you know, you've only got a very small segment extra, it's about only 100 grams more.
Okay. There's just more air involved.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
you can always but like you know, if it, so if you got set up tubeless, think of how much extra sealant you're going to need.
Yeah,
like air.
How much air you're going to? We may have some spare hot air. I don't know, but like,
how much longer is going to take the wheel to go around to tighten the spokes? I mean, I do that. Why we do it? I mean, why?
Well, that is it. Just because we can, should we be? Should we be like dicking around with this? That's the thing.
I think we've decided that mullets, Steve, shouldn't be tolerated.
Wow, that's very direct.
That's got into a far deeper
conversation. Oh, that's a whole other show. But you are, just because we can, should we be? And I think the consumers, you know, I think consumers are over. In fact, I dived into a few of the comments, very mixed bag of comments on this video. Watch as you can imagine. So I've got a few here. So just Nicholas Rao up on screen now, it will say, I will never give up my 27.5s. I will die on this hill. Well, I mean, he's not even going for 29.
The thing is, that's all the downhillers were saying in 2017. Yeah.
Agreed.
And what's the state of it now?
I give it 5 years. Darren Wall, maybe if you're 6'4" or taller, this might work, but for normal riders like me, 29 on the front is more than big enough. The weight is a massive factor too, which I think it is. Like when you add in the additional tire weight that you'd need, the fork, you know, add up all the little things, the sealant, the a couple of additional spokes, potentially your bigger, longer spokes. Mm-hmm. You know, it does all add up. Mm-hmm. And then, but you know, it wasn't all like, whoa, you know, like pitchforks at dawn kind of thing, head to the keyboards. Wrigglesand.
Is that what they do down in Yeovil? Sorry, not Yeovil, down. Wow. Sorry, I got it wrong. Wells, I meant Wells.
That is what they do, but yeah, that is what they do. Similar to Wales, right?
Wales and Wells, yeah.
Wrigglesand wrote, 8 seconds is a massive advantage considering the trail tyres used. Hate to say it, but racers will use whatever new advantage they can to be faster. And that's true.
Do you think this is something we're going to talk about in 3 years' time, or do you think it's just a fad?
I think fad in the enduro gravity world. I think they'll try it. It won't cotton on.
Gravel, surely.
Yeah, that's it. I think in like distance, XC, marathon, gravel, adventure stuff, I could see it kicking off, yeah.
Good stuff. Right, thank you for joining us. Talk about mullets. We'll have to kick you out and we'll get the young whippersnapper, James, in.
It's been a pleasure.
Right, we've been joined by James to add a bit of a cross-country flavour, but also bring down the average age by about 20 years, I think.
Thanks for having me.
And also the average skill level as well.
And absolutely average hair length.
Yeah. Me and James, we did a video last week where I used my e-bike, used this new software called Smart Heart Rate Control, which you can set how hard you want to work, and then it basically uses the e-bike motor to keep you in that zone, which is a really interesting way of using an e-bike for what I would call fun training. You don't have to ride a road bike all day, twiddling your legs. You can actually get out on your mountain bike and ride in this zone. But it's quite an interesting new angle on training and e-bikes. And I'm sure you've got your opinion on this, Steve, because I think you ride an e-bike slightly differently to most people.
I don't know. It's funny because I've been running now for about 18 months. I don't know if I've told you.
Yep. Banged on about it.
And so when I got on my e-bike rides, they're like zone 4, zone 5. And then when I started running, it was zone 3. I was thinking, what am I doing wrong with running? And it's like, it felt like super intense. But then I guess with an e-bike, you're peaking, aren't you, really?
Get very a lot higher than I do on a climb, because you're taking a hard route generally. Yeah.
I do like the technical climbing. I think the physicality
is the type of e-bike riding you do is quite unique. The type of
ride I see a lot of people use e-bikes for is to get more downhill laps in, whereas your concern isn't just riding downhill, it's also about enjoying going back up. So that's probably why you see those heart rate spikes more than others.
Whereas I think I've lost a bit of fitness just because I don't ride as much, but I also don't get, you know, on enduro bike, those kind of intervals. Mm. But also I don't really do much zone two, other than, you know, with this new software, my heart rate was incredibly consistent. But James, you say that you do a lot of zone two. Yeah. We'll have to explain what that is.
So zone two is like a massive buzzword in road cycling at the moment. And basically in like a five zone structure, it's that heart rate zone or power zone you can do all day. It's not too intense and it doesn't fatigue you much, but you get a lot of bang for your buck fitness gains. So it's, for most people, probably around 140 to 150 beats per minute. It's like really good for increasing like your cardiac output, stroke volume of your heart, making you...
Don't you get bored?
Well, that's the thing. Like a lot of road riders, they do 5-6 hours out on the road, just zone two.
It's probably something that, you know, pros know about and do.
Yeah.
I used to try and do this when I did ride a road bike a lot when I was a pro mountain biker. I used to try and convince my mates to come and do zone two, and they'd want to just sprint off. And I'm like, well, you've ruined it already. Like, no one really does it unless you know about it.
Thing is, Don, right, when you're a World Cup downhill racer, riding downhill is zone four or five, right?
I've got heart rate data from the Fort William World Cup where I was maxed out the whole way. Top to bottom, you know, dropped a couple of beats. It is really anaerobic.
I think this is the misunderstanding. Just because you race at zone 4/5, to build your engine, you don't, because you can't sustain zone 4/5. And how knackering is that if you always ride? So you have to ride at this lower intensity to build your engine.
Which is why I was quite staggered when we did the power hour together, me and you and Owen and my mate who was 80. When you rode Pontypool, you rarely got into like zone 4 or 5 on the e-mountain bike. So that kind of contradicts what we're saying to a certain extent, right?
Yeah, well, I found the biggest thing for me on an e-bike is on the climb, you hit the limiter, because I was riding on boost because it was a power hour. So I hit the limiter and then it limits the amount of intensity I can put in. And at Pontypool, the descents are so steep that the intensity was more like a physical intensity rather than like an aerobic cardiovascular intensity, because I couldn't sprint because I was going downhill. So it wasn't really an intense workout.
Is it quite hard to do a zone two ride on a
mountain bike?
What was the track called again?
Bob Gnarly and Granny's Fanny.
Granny's Fanny, I thought it was, yeah.
You rode
quite
that
slippery,
few
wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, a few airy moments.
A few airy moments,
yeah.
But moving on.
It is quite hard to do zone two on a mountain bike, which is previously why a lot of people used to do a lot of road bike miles, mountain biking. But I think we're seeing that less. Like Charlie Aldridge now is doing a lot of riding on e-bikes, and a lot more people are riding mountain bikes now.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? If you, do you think you need to do that, Steve? I feel like I there's a big part of my sort of fitness is missing from not doing that nowadays.
It's interesting. You know, I like to have the mix, riding an e-bike and doing running, maybe riding a road bike every now and again, because, I want to keep my physique.
Yeah. Well, we had a chat. We spent a lot of time together recently in a car in Italy, driving all over the shop. And you told me that your wife had made a comment that since you've been riding e-bikes for the last 10 years, you've got a slightly smaller ass now.
No, let's get the facts right. She said a significantly smaller ass now.
Because... I think this is the thing that I noticed with e-bikes is you can still get out of breath, but because you've got the motor, you don't feel that tension in your... You know when you winch up a climb on a mountain bike, you feel like the torque, whereas you don't feel that on an e-bike, so you're not engaging your glutes, are you? Yeah. Hence why your glutes are tiny now.
It's funny, the thing is, I was speaking to Hans Ray last week, and he says...
He's got a small bum as
he
well.
He says, his wife has said exactly the same thing to him. Maybe, I mean, is that an age thing, though?
Maybe
know?
This is a poll for the EMBN and GMBN viewers.
Over 60.
Your bum getting smaller.
Yeah. Does e-bikes make your bum smaller? Let us know.
I have said that...
Donaldson, look at your ass.
I've bought this... I bought a hardtail because I want to get out pedalling.
You want a bigger ass.
Well, I feel like I'm missing a bit of... Right, it's the achy leg feeling, not necessarily...
Sorry.
Go on.
Oh, keep going.
I thought it was two grown-ups.
It's what I said last week. I bought a hardtack, so I want to do some pedaling because I do miss that. Although this has changed it a bit with what you can do with these Avanox bikes now. I really want to get the achy leg feel from pedaling a proper bike again, and I miss that from not having a mountain bike actually.
Yeah, I noticed that massively. The first time we rode together, I went on the KD Works round your local woods, and it was amazing. And then we finished at like 4 or 5, so I was like, I'll go back on my XC bike. I couldn't believe how much my legs were sore again from that tension on your legs riding a proper bike.
Can we just to camera reassure people, when we went to Elba, I did get you into zone 5 on a climb, right?
Yeah.
And you were out of breath and you were swaying, right?
Yeah. You did.
That was a fact on the ground, wasn't it?
That was a fact.
So it can be done, can't it?
Yeah. I just think you can't sustain it because you either reach the limiter or I think it's harder to sustain.
I guess at that point you need to get into super tech long mountain climbs.
Yeah.
Which are really horrible, right?
Yeah.
It's probably not that realistic for it's people not, where they live not, and not, what yeah. they want to do as well.
Yeah. So wrapping up then, what do you think of 32-inch wheels bikes?
I do not think the industry, everyone will be riding them. I think it's a niche thing for racers and taller people, but I do not think it is going to be the new 29. I think it'll be an optional extra, but it's not going to be the new standard.
I don't think the fans want them, but fans let us know in the comments. But yeah, I'd love to hear what actually people do want. It's probably not that much change, but there you go. Jump in the comments. Thanks for watching. We'll be back next week with the Global Mountain Bike Show.
Cheers for watching.